Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the first day of May, which is Loyalty Day, so I hope we're out there showing our loyalty to someone or to our country, if that matters. But I'm thankful that you're tuning in to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. Thank you for liking my fan page. Great things are coming up in the future, so be on the lookout for that. But today I'm here with Stanley G. Buford today on my show, and I'm very excited. He is the author of Thanks, Dad, which is an awesome, exciting children's book. I mean, you have to read it to understand it. He is also... He also serves as the program director in the School Partnerships Program, a school improvement project at DePaul University. Stanley has so many hats. He has worked as teacher, coach, and facilitator, and has coordinated a variety of school-related programs during his more than 20-year tenure in the educational field. So, Stanley, good afternoon. Thank you for being on the show with all
good
these
afternoon,
hats.
Good. I was trying to do something when I saw your glowing review there on your fan book page, that Facebook page. I want to encourage your listeners. Hey, look, that's where it is. I'm encouraged and I'm excited that to see that somebody that follows in those footsteps and is doing a good thing.
Oh well, thank you. I don't have as many hats as you do, but I do try.
You try real hard. But I think what happens is it didn't come about. I got some of those hats by default, you know. I think when I started out in education, I was working for a bank, and it fell on hard times. And, you know, I decided, my mother told me, there are 10 children in my family, and I'm the only college graduate. And my mother just had... My mother said, we'll see something different with you. I'm expecting something different from you, you know. So she would always admonish me that, you know, I don't know how it is that she felt like I'm child number three. I want something different out of you. And as a result of that, when I worked for the bank, I kind of saw my way. You know, I was a business major, so I really kind of, when the bank hit the skids, I decided that I was going to go into the field of at least try my hand in the field of education, and that's when I started divvying off into other areas because I saw that the needs of those children in the inner cities, which is where I chose to teach, my background comes from. I said, hey, look, you know, I'm going to do something to address that. So that's why, you know, I got into the thing about starting the after-school mentoring programs to help these kids that had challenges. You know, and that's where it all kind of started.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. I mean, what actually motivates you to help others be awesome?
You know, when I look, as I said before, I'm a product of the inner city. Grew up in, in the mean streets on the west side of the city of Chicago, and I saw some challenges, and I was able to rise up and get beyond that. And then I discovered that... you know, my mother, she's a Christian, no-nonsense woman that still believes. I mean, I show up at home. I still call my mother's house home, although, you know, I have a family. But when I go to my mom's house and she says, and I got my briefcase in hand, and she tells me, I want you to go to the store and get me something. I got to put that briefcase down, and I got to back up that itinerary. So I go to, you know, my schedule, where it is, you know, where I got it on my iPhone, and I back everything up because Mama says she wants to send me to the store. You understand what I'm saying? This is how she taught us, and this is how we came up, that your first duty and responsibility is the family. So I remember those things, and even now I acknowledge my mom for having put me in a place to be successful and encourage me to do the right thing. So as we were coming up, I mean, this is just the way it was. You would talk to be responsible to look. That Buford name means something. And don't you go giving it a bad you know how that went. So we just, you know, and as a result of that, she was always a helper, helping people in the neighborhood, helping people in the community, whatever. And I saw these things happening, so I just kind of took notes and patterned my life accordingly.
And see, that's what children do. We copy off what we believe are our role models, which are our parents, and that's what you did. And that's what, and she did the right thing. You look out for your family. You look out for the ones who look out for you. I'm going to bite the hand to feed you, as I was always telling you.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Stanley, did I leave out anything else on your background during your introduction?
Well, just to say this, you know, the city of Chicago, and grew up with some challenges that were there, and the parents, you know, it was not, you know, I grew up in gang-infested territory, had to make some decisions, right and wrong, and things of this nature. And I think as a result of that, many of my experiences found their ways into my writing. And that's how, you know, when I write stories like Selena, You're Beautiful, or Thanks, Dad, these are stories that, you know, every story that I write has an inception, has a foundation, has a seed, if you will, in that community, and how I came out of that, what my experiences were. I guess really kind of like a song that I learned in my Sunday school choir, you know, my soul looks back and wonder how I got over. So as I've gotten over, I look back at these experiences and I put them into print.
Well, see, that's a good
thing. How it goes.
You turned the negative into positive. You didn't just stop. Hey. You fought fight.
Exactly. That's why negative to a positive. No, it took the lemon and made some lemonade, if you will.
So this children book that you have out, Thanks, Dad, is that particularly in regards to your life?
Yes, loosely based on my life. And the reason it was, my first book, as you know, Not All Teachers Are Parents, But All Parents Are Teachers, that was my first really serious book, if you will, and that was a parent guide. And it took me 16 years to kind of put that together. Shortly after I left the bank and I was a substitute teacher in the city, I chose, you know, they broke the city up into four grids, you know, the north, south, east, and west. And I chose the west side of Chicago. That was the tough district. They had a hard time kind of keeping that populated with teachers, substitute teachers, whatever. And I chose that particular group. So I would go into these areas, and then I would see what the challenges were. So I came back, you know, I would call sub-center and say, hey, look, make sure you put me in this district or that district, or can I make it into that school or whatever, if I could see that I could make a difference. Let's just say if they had a band program or something, and I could go in there and encourage the hearts of those that had instruments and wanted to, you know, be musicians or whatever the case may be, I can go in there and kind of encourage their hearts. So that's how I set up my grid. Now, I would go into other districts, but I primarily concentrated myself on the west side because I was familiar with that. But as that is the case, this is where I would draw some of my case studies so that as I moved on, I could look back and have those experiences to draw on in the positive sense of the words. But the Thanks, Dad book came about as a result, 16 years of putting my research together for Not All Teachers Are Parents, But All Parents Are Teachers, which incidentally was an award-winning book that I'm thankful to say that the president, President Barack Obama, he made reference to that particular book when it came out in 2006. As a, you know, he said he liked the book, and I was very honored for that particular matter. But so I said to myself, I'm going to write something that's fun. And what would happen in the process of me writing this book, I would take my two kids when they were very young, I would take them to the Oak Park Public Library where I lived. And I started looking around, you know, you know how a children's library is arranged so that, you know, the books are at eye level, and the other cases and things of this nature, you know, the furniture is built for children and things of this nature. And I would come in there, and I would sit my children down, and I would go and look for books that were Afrocentric. And I wasn't finding many, and that bothered me. And then I said to myself, you know, looking at from the perspective of an African-American male, raising my own children, and then wanting my community, because Oak Park is a let's put it this way. It's a suburb that's just west of Chicago, but it's a progressive community that is diverse, primarily, you know, whites. They're primarily populated by whites, but it's very diverse, and I wanted my children to grow up in that environment, unlike the one that I had been exposed to. And what I would do was I would bring them down and I would sit them down and I would put the books in front of them, and I'd try to, and I'd go back and try to find books where they're, you know, they were African-American males in the home raising their families, or maybe just a book that talked about the African-American experience and things of this nature, and it was so limited. So I said, you know what, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to bring it back to this library, and I'm going to make sure that they include it in their shelves. So that's how Thanks Dad came about, and that's why the idea came back to me to kind of follow through on a promise I had made myself. So in 2007, that book was published, and it made the Amazon.com bestseller list. I wasn't really trying to write a bestseller in any sense of the word, but I knew that I had to do something that would, number one, identify with a need that the library and my community had, and at the same time, do something that I could show my children, hey, look, you know, I'm going to write something that's directed to you in a genre that's specific to your age group. So they like the idea, too.
That you could cherish. That's right, and it's really, and you are, I agree with that. It's hard to find children's book that's related or even illustrated or written by African-Americans. And usually if you find it, they got it all the way in the back of the store. You have to make it up.
Oh, God.
That is, or somebody got to pee for that little space, and it doesn't make any sense. It's very sad that you have to go through that, but I'm glad that you did bring all the books that you have read. Let's see. I think it's other books that you have done, Growing Up Poor in a Frank Lloyd Wright Home, Encounter with the Angel, He Always Paved My Way, Good Advice Is Just That. I love these books because... they're informed to, yes, they do relate to us, but they're encouraging, too. It's like, let's take this a step farther. Like, you don't have to be stuck in your element because of your skin color. And, of course, these, especially with the way times are really going, because I know people sometimes fail to realize that there is color, but it is what it is. And we see that now with the way things are going with the L.A. Clippers. And,
oh, God. Yeah, you couldn't have said it better.
I can't believe she read it. It's a 10-hour tape out on him too. And the fact of the matter, you're not going to be able to go to the game. I was just reading.
The more that comes out, you know, I write also. I'm practicing my journalism too. You know, I used to write for a community newspaper, the North Lyondale Community News, and I wrote a weekly column. It was a parents' column called, the parent connection.
Right.
And every week I had a deadline that I had to come up with some new material that was directed to parents. And one of the things that happened that springboarded into a I'm writing for two online magazines, and I am a feature writer, so I always pick a topic that's fresh in the news. And I was working on a topic, you know, I was working on this one particular topic that had to do with, I wrote an article that was titled, Can Racists Love Jesus? And it got such a tremendous response that I said, my next article that I'm going to write about is something to do with how conservative GOP politicians sometimes say the right thing at the wrong time as they see it. And then Paul Ryan said something about going up, you know, in a city. And then naturally, you know, Clive Von Bundy, he said something foolish about us in the community, you know, putting our kids in jail and our women aborting children, foolish thing. And then when this latest issue came out with Stewart, the guy that owns the Clippers, Sterling, I said, oh, my goodness, oh, my gosh. So I compiled all that, and I did a history. And we call this particular article that I'm doing, that I'm working on now, it's called GOP suffers from foot and mouth disease. And I think one of the things that we're trying to disprove at this particular point, elevate and encourage these African-American children to excel and do their best. At the same time, we say to the bigots of the world that we're not going to tolerate it anymore. It's not going to be a part of our mainstay. And when you take that time to do something or say something foolish, we're going to call you out for it, but we're going to be progressive to move forward. And I think it's created a groundswell that have allowed us to see things for what they are, that we're not in a post-racial society, that, you know, we've seen this week alone, well, this month, in the past month, I should say, how the California decision with regard to affirmative action has been gutted, and that we must be progressive. We must take the high road, as many people have said, in order to move forward. And this is what I've done in my writing. Every particular story that I've written has an essence of truth in it. You mentioned before about, let's say, growing up poor in a Frank Lloyd Wright house. That was something that I'd actually done. I grew up in a Frank Lloyd Wright house, unfortunately, on the west side of Chicago. And it was an experience, if you will, that allowed me to see things from the perspective. Let's say Frank Lloyd Wright, when he was a young architect, you know, as you know, Frank Lloyd Wright is probably the best-known architect in the United States of America. He had some he had some demons. He had some problems, too. But he's revered in the city of Oak Park because, you know, that was his upbringing was there. But one of the issues that had to do with that, this particular housing complex called the Francisco Terrace, which opened up right around 1920, in the early 1920s, and by the time the Great Depression had ended, right around 1934, it had gone from all white to all black. So when my family moved in, it was pretty much a slum. But it was nevertheless an opportunity for me to write about something that I experienced in my lifetime that was going to be a stone and not a stumbling block. So I wrote about that, and it's a realistic fiction story about a mom that experiences some challenges in a underdeveloped housing unit and decides that since there's these particular problems, I'm going to make the best of this situation, and she trudges forward, and then her children encourage her, understanding and knowing that, you know, hey, our primary objective is get a good education and move forward. So they find some positive things, and just by happenstance, there's a false door, and I know I'm telling your audience probably too much of the story, but maybe this will encourage them to read this. Lo and behold, there's some artifacts that are left behind by the architect himself, Frank Lloyd Wright, which naturally they take them, and they take them on the road to the antique show, and they sell them for X number of dollars, and they live happily ever after. But these are the kinds of stories that I put together based on my childhood that I think are worthwhile to hear and to understand and appreciate, and also to provide a backdrop that allows these children to know that if I can do it, if I can come from the inner city and I can do what's expected of me, and then I can graduate, and to God be the glory, you know, that I've been able to, get in my second book that I came out with, Encounter with an Angel, which was a wonderful story about a guy that grows up on the west side, and then he meets what he later finds out to be his guardian angel. And the guardian angel, he walks her across a drug-infested street, and unbeknownst to him, you know, he just steps right up to the plate, and she comes up to him, and she says, hey, can you walk me across Lake Street, which is a dangerous area? And then he looks up, and he realizes, well, you know, I'm 16 years old, and I know what's on the other side of that street, and here is a Caucasian woman asking me to walk her across a dangerous street like that. But he instantly, he says, okay, ma'am, I'll do it, and he does it. And when he gets to the other side of the street, the woman asks him to bow his head and make a wish. And he makes a wish, and he says, I want to, and he was going away to college that particular year, and he had finished his last year, and he ended a job that an experience that he'd had, and he said, "I want to be." His prayer was, "I want to be successful in school. I want to be a role model to everybody that comes behind me, my classmates." And that was his. You know, he could have asked for anything, riches, but that was the wish that he made, to be successful in school. And when he looked up, he looked around. The woman was gone. But he felt good in his heart that he had done something that he didn't have to do. And that year when he went away to school, he was very successful in school. And I'm not going to tell the storyline, but he later found out that the woman that he had provided this gesture of kindness to was an angel, the angel Rita. And it's just a wonderful story. And incidentally, my Christian values tell me that it's a true story because the story actually happened to me.
Well, see, and that's good, too. I mean, a lot of people think because you're dismissed as this lower-class person or you come out of poverty that you can't succeed. But that's over. You only set your mind to, if you set your mind to be trapped like that, then that's up to you. But you can actually do it, and you are the living proof that you can. And there's so many children out here raised in poverty. I mean, but you got to choose to behave differently. You got to face that daily, yes, but you got to be able to overcome the challenges.
Exactly.
And I just want to say,
that's what I try to do.
And, you know, all this racism going on, I mean, you got to have a little humor, and it's kind of, it is funny how people can actually dislike a color. If you ask me, I think it's stupid, really, because it is. It's stupid because if you really look at it, nobody is really a true African-American, or you can't really say that you're totally white. You can, because we all have a little mixture of everything in us.
Right,
I mean, it's ridiculous that you don't like me because you just see a skin color. I'd rather be the skin color than to be a plain piece of paper, white piece of paper, you know. I always look at them funny. You're like, really? What's that movie, Stanley Red tells, when he said, "You got the nerve to call us colored?" Because when you turn yellow, when you're envy, you turn green. And when you get mad, but we're color, and I just bust out loud. I'm like, that makes perfect sense.
That's an excellent example. Color. Also, in 12 Years a Slave, when he talked about the issue of slavery. Oh, you haven't? Oh, you got to see it. You got to
see it. Oh, don't you want to me, I got to watch that movie.
It's a wonderful experience, as you said, that has to do with trying to justify ill will and animosity, and to the extent that, well, you know, the Bible says that we should, you know, treat people right, and that we should, the slaves should honor their masters, and, you know, we can take the Bible and we can contort it to meet our personal needs as much as we want to, but when the racism starts coming out, we see how it becomes problematic for the person that's speaking the ill will. And as history has taught us over a period of time, we're going to rise up. We're gonna move forward. And I've used my own personal illustration to show these children that I come into contact with that it's you know, the first thing I do if I'm called to speak before a group of youth, I always tell them about my background and the same experience that I've talked about with your listeners today is how I approach from the kids' perspective. I always tell them, hey, look, I grew up in the inner city. I was the first of 10 children to graduate college, and my mother insisted that I do the right thing. And I tell them about the experience I had in my undergrad, that is to say my high school, John Marshall High School, which was not considered one of the top magnet schools of the city or whatever the case may be, but yet still, I became a DePaul University graduate with honors, you know, knowing DePaul to be one of the top 10 Catholic universities in the country and known worldwide. Now, how, as a kid from the west side of Chicago, how could that have been possible? Because my faith, I'm serious about moving forward. My faith is, I've always been able to lean on it I've always been able to find something positive, as you say, in a negative situation, so that my experience is nobody can ever keep you down. Martin Luther King used to say that a man can't ride your back when you're standing up straight. If you're standing upright, a man can't ride your back. And I've just used that as my opportunity to pass along information through my experience and through my books. You know, I write songs too, as you know. And my song, you know, the process that I use, it's a copyright. It's called the Dry Dreams Production Program.
Okay.
And in the Dry Dreams Production Program, basically what I do, I'll write an e-book, I'll record an audio book, and then I'll write a song, a theme song for my stories. So let's say story like Selena, You're Beautiful, one of my 16 projects. I'll write a song for it, and talk about the experience. The Selena, You're Beautiful is a story, unfortunately, that came about. One of my students, when I was teaching elementary school, came to me and told me that she had an experience that was not a positive one. I won't give the storyline away again, but she told me that she wanted to talk to me about it, and I told her to stay after class, and I called her mom and told her that, hey, look, can you come and pick her up a little bit later, because we're going to talk. And she told me about an experience that was happening, and I wrote it in the book. And later she decided, no, that's telling too much. She didn't want it. So I changed all the characters around and decided that and basically when I wrote the song that coincides with the storyline, Selena, You're Beautiful, you've gone the extra mile. You traded in your heartache for a beautiful smile. Hold on to your dreams, girl. You bought with a price. And this song kind of captured the essence of what she was going through and what she had experienced. And it was just a beautiful opportunity, I think, for her to have something that would look back and experience a negative experience that she had with regard to her family, and then to move positively forward, because now, you know, she's doing real good. After we focused that spotlight on her, she was so excited and surprised to see me put it into print that she was she's overwhelmed, and it's kind of turned her experience around, and I was very, very happy and fortunate to see that come about as a result of a work that I had put into production based on her life experience, which was not necessarily a positive, but when she saw that particular project in print, it just gave her new strength to fight the issues that she had weathered through over a course of time, and she was really happy about it, and so was I.
Oh. Well, that's awesome. That's a blessing in the sky, because sometimes we take a lot of our hurtful encounters and we associate them with whatever is going on with today. As for instance, I was telling the guests, I had bad experiences growing up with my stepfather, and when somebody would tell me, oh, you're pretty, I would look at them like, no.
Yeah.
Because I would associate that whatever you told me with what people would tell me now, and I'd be like, no, you're not saying that in a good way. That sounds like in a bad way, even for women, if they would tell me that. But I had to learn to overcome that, because in all of us, we all got an inner child in us that's going to either tell us to do good or bad regardless. So I'm
you got it.
But I'm glad that you mentioned your song. Wait a minute, is it 9 pounds of gold? Because I do have that in my playlist.
Oh, are we going to play 9 pounds of gold?
I sure do got 9 pounds of gold if my mommy playing it.
Look, there's a story, there's a history in that, the 9 pounds of gold. I was teaching a lesson one day, and I was explaining to the kids that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has said that there's 400 million pounds of gold in the oceans of the world. And I told them that it's dispersed in parts per trillion, PPT, which, you know, we've got arsenic in our water that we drink every day, but it's in there in parts per billion. So I said it's dispersed so thinly and minutely that it would be a problem for anybody to try to collect it. But then I took it a step further, and I said, hey, you know what? What if somebody could create a device that would capture all that gold from the water they would really, and a kid, he raised his hand. This kid raised his hand. I think I can do it. If I entered into the science fair, I think I could do it. And the story was born, so I decided that I was going to capture that as part of one of my storylines, and we put it, 9 Pounds of Gold is the name of the story, and it's the story of these inner-city kids that, you know, this one guy, he's this one character, you know, he's a bright student, but he dummies himself down to get along with his homeboys, and finally he meets a guy that is his match, his teacher, Mr. Priestley, and Mr. Priestley says, you know what, I expect more from you. I've seen your scores, and I know that you're a very knowledgeable child, you know, your scores are up there at the top, and I see how you come into my science room, you pretend like you don't know head from tail. I want you to knock it off. I want you to come through. I'm going to enter you into the science fair. I know that you have a interest in this gold thing, and I want you to move with it. And reluctantly, he accepts the project, and he and his science teacher set about this process of extracting that gold, and lo and behold, it works, and he finds a he puts together his science fair so that it actually does what he said. He extracts the gold, and from all over the world, they beat a path to his door. And that basically is the premise of that particular story, 9 Pounds of Gold. Now, the idea for the 9 pounds is that there's about 7.5 billion people on the planet of the Earth, planet Earth. So what he says is he's a young kid, about 12 years old, and he doesn't have a complete premise on a worldview, but he says, I'm going to give the money. I won't keep it for myself. I've grown up poor, so I don't think anybody ought to be poor anymore. So I'm going to give everybody, when I collect my money, I'm going to give everybody some money. I'm going to divide it evenly among all the people of the world. And, you know, when you do the math, 400 million divisible by about 7 billion people comes out to 9. The operative word is 9. So we decided to use that as a storyline, 9 pounds of gold, 9 pounds. Everybody, we need 9 pounds of gold.
All right now. Yeah, you're well.
So it's a story and a song, yeah. And the song is, listen, the interesting thing about the song is I wrote the song for it, 9 pounds ago. It's a rap song, and I gave it to a buddy of mine that lives in Florida. As a matter of fact, that's his stage name is Floggy, and he set it to music. And as a rap, that was the first time I'd done a rap. And it just came out, you know, it's been played in the UK. It's been played naturally here in the United States, Canada. It's been the song of the week. It's called 9 Pounds of Gold. And it's just a beautiful song, and I love it so much. And it captures the essence of what we're trying to do with that particular project.
Because you, audience, are here to listen to it. And I have it right here. And I'm going to play at this moment. Here we go, 9 pounds of gold.
All right, all right.
I love for others, you never grow old. Make the best of life with the hand you hold. And you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold.
Drink it from the water, oh so cold.
And my friend wouldn't believe it
when my story's told.
Top dog in my class,
if the dice don't pass.
Take the money from the seed,
thanking God on my knees for this
9 pounds of gold.
Pretending to be slow,
so my friends would never know.
Education in my plan,
homies wouldn't understand.
With the gold in my hand,
they're saying I'm the man.
Guess what, fellas, calling to my plan.
Growing up in the hood,
my mama tell me,
work off of your money and you always have bread.
Go to church on Sunday,
don't stay out all night.
Get along with everybody,
don't start no fight.
I'm almost there,
competing in the side fair.
Home is laughing, but I don't care.
From the ghetto to the penthouse,
I know that's rare.
That's my story, how it's told. When I got my 9 pounds of gold.
I love for others, you never grow up. Make the best of life with the hand you hold. And you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold. I love for others, you never grow up. Make the best of life with the hand you hold. And you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold.
All right.
I like it.
Love
it's
that
like a little, little hip hop in it, and it sounds like it got a little bit of jazz.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah, we did some different things with that. That was my first rap. That was my first time I delved into rap. But I like to, you know, have love for others. You never grow old. Make the best of life with the hands you hold, and you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold. I just love that line.
Right? And you don't. You never grow old. I don't see old. There is no age. I always tell people, oh, Stanley, how you keep up yourself. I have seen 70-year-olds who be still kicking the habit around here.
And oh,
they act like they're my age, 31. That's how you keep yourself up. What we're going to do, we're going to end a commercial break, and we're going to come back with Stanley because this is a good conversation. So you stay tuned on the Bright Side with Technisha, and we'll be back after this.
All right.
There's only one station that will keep you happy. Blog Talk Radio. We're taking more of your calls at 347-426-3751. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this commercial break.
This is the sound of a flat-screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have, all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
How about we back with Stanley Buford, and he's a great, great man. Got so many hats, author and a consultant. So many books out here that we don't even know about, and these are the books that need to be placed into some of the school systems, I think, what we need to talk about a little bit. I mean, Dr. Seuss is fine. Don't get me wrong. I grew up with Dr. Seuss, too, but these are actually books pertaining to African Americans, and we need those type of books.
Yes.
I mean, it's never gonna really be enough anyway, Stanley, to learn about our history. We have to go through so much because they're not gonna put it in books. It's not all of it's not gonna go in books, and it's sad that we have to celebrate it for 1 month.
Yeah. Oh boy, you're getting into another one of my pet peeves there. We gotta make it a positive, and we gotta turn this information over to the youth of our day so they can do something with it. So we're doing the best that we can, all things considered.
Now, Sam, you also do a program from boys to men. What inspired that?
I think, you know, as I was saying earlier in the program, I had a buddy of mine, Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, that was he was a student at the time when I was there at Illinois State University in my undergrad. And he's a psychologist. He's a black psychologist, and his specialty is African-American males. And he's a popular speaker. Oh, he's known throughout the country. Basically, he kind of tripped me up. He says, when I lost that job with the bank, I was a little bit despondent, and I was on my way home, and he gave me a call. And he says, listen, there's plenty of work for you to do. The Chicago Public School System, they're hiring, and I really think you ought to hightail it down there to see what you can do. And I really and truly, I did not want to work for them. I had this concept of education and sit down and shut up, and I said, that's not me. So I had to totally transform myself. I went down and I filled out the application at my mother's behest. Hey, look, you need a job. You got a degree. You're the only person in the family that's got one. You have the opportunity to. So, you know, when my mother says something and makes a recommendation, typically I'm going to follow through on it, even though I might be a little bit hesitant because that's just the way she raised it. So I went down there and I had 50 applications. I put in the various business entities and other opportunities that, you know, with an accounting background and a business background. And the first person to call me, the first people to call me was the Chicago Board of Education. They said, yeah, we got an opening. Come on down here. And I went down, and I was trying to talk myself out of the job. Technisha, I'm just being honest with you. I sat down there in front of the in that personnel department, and I was saying, you know, and the lady says, no, Mr. Buford, I'm understanding what it is that you're trying to do, but we need some African-American males in the system, and we really do need for you, at least, you know, you come in as a sub, you can get your background material and your information as you go along, and we'll work with you so that when you go back to school to get your methods classes and your educational training to prepare you to teach for, on a full-time basis, we'll be right there with you. We'll even reimburse you. And not that it was a big deal or anything, but she told me the thing about, she gave me the statistics on the success rates of African-American males. And when she told me that in Chicago, and this is true of most of the major urban cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, Detroit, that African-American males have a hard time of it. So basically, you know, the graduation rate in Chicago Public School was like 50%. That is to say, for every 100 per capita that enter in as freshmen, only 50 will graduate by the time that they're senior. Only 50 or half that class will have graduated, and that was dismal. And when she told me that, and the fact that I could make a difference as a role model, maybe you could change this. So I just believed that what she was saying, and I came on board, and that was my primary job. So I said, well, I'll do this for 2 or 3 years, and I'll give back, and then I'll go back to business. Well, I wound up teaching for 15 years. So in that process, during that process, I came up with an after-school program that I felt would meet the needs of some of the kids that were having these challenges. So we started the program from Boys to Men, a network foundation, which is a 501c3, and we would pull some of the kids from the streets, from the nightlife. We would, you know, we would scour the school for kids that had problems and challenges. It didn't make any difference if they had an IEP or you name it. They were special ed. We didn't turn anybody away. And we basically, the gist of the program was this: we would take them. You know, we would ask gingerly, you know, the companies within the downtown area of Chicago if they would contribute. And sometimes, you know, we would get companies that would contribute clothing, you know, would contribute tickets. You know, we got the White Sox involved, and we got, you know, the Chicago Bears to donate tickets to games. So we would take them to these games. Many of them, for the first time, they'd ever seen a professional sports a play, and then we got the so we had any of a number of companies that would contribute clothing and things of this nature, and we provided these things for these children as an incentive to stay in school, and you know, that continued on through the process of what it was that we were trying to do. And so, you know, in the proceeds from my books, the same things, we have a disclaimer on the second page that talks about the From Boys to Men Network Foundation, and that all the proceeds, I don't put them into my coffers. God has blessed me personally and professionally. But all the proceeds that we make, they go back into the From Boys to Men Network Foundation, which allows these kids to get a leg up on life, which, you know, with some of the issues that we have with crime and disruptive behavior in Chicago that is known around the world, but it's not as bad as people make it out to be, and we're trying to change these lives for the better. So that's why I'm motivated to continue to write techniques. I'm motivated to keep these kids off the street and to see that they have the most positive experiences, so that education is a key. Education is a tool, and you can go from here to there regardless. And if I can do it, if I can come out of the inner city and I can be successful, you can do it too. That's my premise.
Exactly, and it's good to see. Well, as they would say, let's keep it all real. Good to see a brother doing some positive things, and by the African American young males saying that, see, that will encourage them. Because one thing about most children or any child at that matter, they don't care what you know, and they just want to know that you actually care first, and then the rest follow. See, and that's really good, because we're looking at children who are underprivileged, who are academically suffering, and we don't have enough of that. We do need male role models in our school. It's black ones on top of it. We don't always, no offense. I love my white people. I didn't grow up prejudiced or anything, but we need more of our male brothers in school to really show these children that there is a future out here with you males. I mean, females are okay. We see enough of those. We have those as role models, but the males need somebody as a role model too. So I'm glad that you did it. You stuck up for them.
Yeah, exactly. Glad to be a part of it. I'm moving forward. We're always moving forward, always being progressive to do the things that we need to do.
Well, that's why I tell all my coworkers at my job, I said, look forward, don't look back, and head for that light. And I'm not talking about that light. Because they'd be like, which light? I'm not talking about that light. We're not ending yet. I'm just talking about head for that light. The light that's now that you can see, not the big light. We're not calling. Lord's not calling for you just yet.
No.
Because they look at me funny like, that light, no. So, Stanley, what would you say has been your greatest obstacle or challenge in life?
Well, I would say that, you know, I think when I think about that question, I always think about this. There was a movie that had to do with Sophie, you know, Sophie's Choice was a book that I read in high school, and where she had to make a decision between those two kids. And the Gestapo was standing right there, a Jewish woman said, hey, look, you got to part between one of, you got to make a decision between one of these kids. And that was, that was such a gut-wrenching story. Okay. And now I'm in an area that is secure, but
okay.
I wanted to. So what happened was we decided that we were going to do something different. We were going to do something special. And as you can tell, we've had a fire drill in this particular area of the building. But anyway, saying that to say this, my greatest challenge was that I couldn't, every time I would go into a problem situation within a classroom, there were always, if there were 30 boys in the classroom, 15 of those boys would sign up, but we couldn't. You know, we had to limit it because my funds were limited. So that was a tough thing. And, you know, having to put a limit on the number of people that I could actually intake into the program. And that, to some extent, that's still a challenge. And that's why when my books are selling well, I know I'm going to capture as many African-American males as I possibly can. And that's what I'm striving to do. So I'm always looking for new opportunities to market my books and market my songs so that we can take as many kids off the street and make the lives of as many African-American males positive so that we don't revert to some of the issues that they deal with on a daily basis. You know, the number one cause of death for African-American males between the ages of 18 and 24 is homicide. And that's not just here in the city of Chicago. That's in Atlanta. That's throughout. And then the prison population has escalated and skyrocketed for African-American males to the extent that every state in the United States of America that has a criminal justice system, and they all do, African-American males are number one in the population in that criminal justice system. And that's just something wrong with that. So we are attempting to address that and redress it with our program for boys and men. So we're doing as much as we can, but to answer your question specifically, I wish I could do more. So we're trying. We're going out of our way to develop new programs, develop new ideas, and you know, also looking for new funding sources aside from what we're doing already to help to make that a reality.
Right, and see, I keep saying it's a good thing. We need this. Because it is that our black males are being targeted every time. And it goes all the way back to Trayvon Martin, the other young gentleman who got killed at the gas station. Our black males are being taken away from us people. They're being swiped away from us. And if you really look at the rate, most of them get the death penalty quicker than a white man.
Oh, yeah. That's and that's a problem that we have to deal with. Inherent in you look at every major. One of the things that I do when I go, I was in Maryland a couple of weeks ago. You know, the D.C. Maryland Virginia area, and typically when I go into BWI, Baltimore International Airport, I always get a paper, the Washington Post. You know, they're right there side by side. And I look at these, and I cut the articles out, and I take them back, and I spread the articles out, and I erase any information with regard to where the paper emanated from. But I want them to read the stories, things that happen within these communities. And when you look at how this issue of frustration and confusion sets in within a community, it's not specific to any particular group. These are just experiences. As these kids find out, they'll say, oh, somebody's broke into a liquor store, and they had this issue, whatever. They said, didn't this happen right down the street in my community? No, this is something that happened in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You know, so they see that these experiences, they're not specific to any particular group or neighborhood. And then when they know that these things are happening to other people, they want to know, well, what can we do to correct this problem? Because people, typically speaking, African-American males don't want to stay in a quagmire. They don't want to stay in a problem. If you see that you can give them a leg up and they can defend themselves and be respected and appreciated, you cut down on gang level. You cut down on gang violence. You cut down on some of the frustration and confusion that's inherent within that community. So this is why it's incumbent upon us to do as much as we can to make an outreach, because it's very easy for us to, on the back end, say, well, within the prison population, over the course of a lifetime of an individual that is incarcerated, the average state is going to spend $1 million, to incarcerate that person for 33 years. It's going to take about $1 million. When programs like mine, From Boys to Men and other mentor programs, you know, $1,000 a month would go a long way for us to supply these kids with backpacks and school clothes. Yeah. And, you know, we take them, you know, on excursions. Sometimes I'll just tell them, hey, look, I'll send a school bus to the school and say, as many people as will that want to go to church on Sunday, I'm going to take you to my church. And the first week we did that, I sent a couple of SUVs, and we had to leave kids behind. So the next week I sent a school bus. Then it became two school buses. So when you give kids an opportunity to correct a wrong or be positive-minded or to look forward to something positive, they're going to take that road out. Every time a choice has to be made for the better, they're going to make a better choice when we provide them with the information that's necessary to keep themselves moving forward. Now, then the final thing that has to do with that piece is this. Our program is based on what we call a copyright, what we have as a copyrighted program. It's called HELPS, H-E-L-P-S. It spells it out, and the acronym is H, Health and Hygiene. We talk about that.
Okay.
E, Economics and Education, why it's important to get an education and stay in school. L, Literacy and the Law, the problems that you're going to have if you don't learn to read, and you run into a problem with the law. P, police communication and parenting, why it's important for parents to talk with their children so that they don't become problematic, or have mentors within the community that will do the same thing. And then finally, S. S is for sports and society, and we destroy the myth of making it to the pros. Now, every brother is not going to make it to the pros. We don't sugarcoat that. We don't tell them, you know, something that we know would be an issue. We tell them that this is what you have to do. This is what it's going to take for you to be positive-minded, and then that takes care of that. And then we find that the kids generally respond very well to it. They respond very well to the health, what we call the health program.
And you see, I know we're focusing on our black guys and everything, but let's make sure we keep our eyes on these black girls, too, because I tell my girls all the time, do not be a statistic out here in this world. Learn how to read and be a powerful woman.
Yeah.
Be a powerful black woman. Because that's one thing, when you don't learn how to read, you be somebody's fool, and they will use you out here and use you up like a bitch. My husband's stepfather is a perfect example for that. Her boyfriend uses her, and she knows how to read a little bit, but it's not enough, and she don't have the educational background behind it. So I get on mine all the time. I told him, we're going to be working this summer because you're not going to be like that. I'm not going to have you out here depend on a man and he beating you up. And then I might have to take him out. I don't want to take him out. I'm going to have to do that family. As mamas now, we got to protect. I don't want to take him out, family. I'm just keeping it real.
I got one. I have a mother, believe me, and she still tells me, still gives me advice on the right thing to do, and I'm still taking advice from her. So I understand completely what you're saying.
Right. You have to go back like Madea. Well, let me go in my purse. You want to leave in Baltimore, or we can go through life again. I have two daughters, so that's double work. So I get on them all the time. I don't care about them being eight my butt. Yeah. They're not babies anymore. I stay on them. Too many of our black children slipping through the hole when nobody's trying to save them, but I got to save mine. Stanley, can you tell us how we could go about purchasing your books, or in particular, if guests wanted to contact you?
Okay, if you wanted to get the book, what you could do is, if you wanted to get my book, what you could do, you could go to Amazon.com. That's the world's largest retailer. They have it for sale and they have it available. And this will be the best method. If somebody wanted to contact me, they could go to Stanley G. Buford, STANLEYG, Buford, B as in boy, UFORD, StanleyGBuford.com. And some of the books are available on that website, but the Amazon is the best way to go, Amazon.com. And just put my name in there, Stanley G. Buford. And again, that's STANLEYG, period, Buford, B as in boy, UFORD. And that would bring up just about every work that we have available in print. And then and our books are economically priced. I don't have a book that costs more than – I don't have an e-book, I should say, for children that costs more than $4.99. And the average price is about $2.50 for the e-book. So it's not an expensive proposition. And we're looking to get into some of the school districts. We're looking to get into some of the Sunday schools. All the books have a moral aversion and, a positive message. So we're looking to do something positive.
Oh, good, Stanley. That's awesome. Are there any more upcoming future engagements?
We're working on an itinerary right now. And if anybody wanted to get an updated version of the itinerary, they could just go to my website, or they can just call. They can contact me at From Boys to Men, FromBoysToMen, FromBoysToMen@gmail.com. That's my email address, and then we could get the information on the itinerary on what we're doing and the new projects that we're working on and things of that nature.
Well, thank you, Stanley, for being on the show today and inspiring us so much to get out here and do something, encouraging our black youth to not just let them go. So I appreciate that so much.
All right. Listen, it's been a pleasure. Technisha, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And as I said before, I want to encourage anybody to like that page on Facebook, because I really did get quite a bit out of it when I went there as a resource.
Well, thank you so much, Stanley. You have a blessed one, too.
Thank you. You, too. We'll talk soon. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to keep your contact information. I got you in my contact.
All righty. All right. Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
You, too. Everyone, that was Stanley Buford, the author and consultant. Please go on Amazon, check out his books. They're very inspirational to all my parents out there. Let's just save our youth. It's the time now. We don't want to wait till they get in prison. Too many of them are already locked up. So make sure that we're doing our part to put back into the community, whatever we could do. So let's support one another. But I really do appreciate you for tuning in to my show. Make sure you check out Stanley's song, 9 Pound of Gold, that we played today. And check me out for tomorrow. I'll be on at 12 o'clock p.m. And thank you, and God bless you so much.
All right. Are we out?
For others, you never grow up. Make the best of life with the hand you hold. And you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold.
Take it from the water, oh so cold.
And my friends wouldn't believe it when my story's told.
Top dog in my class,
if the dice don't pass.
Take the money from the seas.
Thanking God on my knees for this 9 pounds of gold.
Pretending to be slow,
so my friends would never know.
Education in my plan,
homies wouldn't understand.
With the gold in my hand,
they're saying I'm the man.
Guess what, fellas, calling from my plan.
Growing up in the hood, my mama tell me,
work hard for your money and you always have bread.
Go to church on Sunday,
don't stay out all night.
Get along with everybody,
don't start no fights.
All my teachers help, I'm almost there.
Competing in the side fair,
home is laughing, but I don't care.
From the ghetto to the penthouse,
I know that's rare.
That's my story, how it's told, when I got my 9 pounds of gold.
I love for others, you never grow up. Make the best of life with the hand you hold. And you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold. I love for others, you never grow up. Make the best of life with the hand you hold. And you'll never have to wish for 9 pounds of gold.
Before I leave, I just wanted to say congratulations to Vanessa Rockamore's son, Zachary. He is the student of the month at his school, Pates Creek Elementary School. Way to go, Zachary. You keep up the good work. And make sure you tune into the Bright Side with Technisha daily. And God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to the Bright Side with Technisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.